Okay, so just to pick up where we left off, but including also what we added in our Chumash discussion. So we had been talking about the prohibition of eating, to whatever extent it is, on Erev Pesach, and what is motivating that. And we talked about how it could connect to a few things, how it could connect to a desire to eat the matzah with greater te'avon, with greater interest, whether that's an aspect of hiddur mitzvah or it ties into the lechem oni theme. It somehow connects to the idea that the matzah is supposed to highlight. We talked about how all of this emphasizes matzah as a positive value and not merely the counterpart to chametz. And we got into a little bit the idea of the chavivas hamitzvah angle also, which could be an additional component, could be a kol ha'Torah kula idea. And we noted even earlier today how it could tie into matzah specifically as a part of the Zecher L'Tzias Mitzrayim and the idea that we need a positive message of chavivas hamitzvos to be going towards, and how that is integrated into even the experience of Tzias Mitzrayim itself. And on Thursday, we talked about how Rashi, in our parsha this past week that we read yesterday morning, how Rashi quotes from the Mechilta that they were carrying the matzahs on their backs as they left Mitzrayim, and they could have presumably put the matzahs on an animal of some kind, but they carried it themselves in order to show chavivas hamitzvah. And this here again ties into the whole circularity, because this was not their mitzvah yet, the mitzvah of matzah, and yet nonetheless, the symbolism of the mitzvah and being involved in it personally was something that was noteworthy even at that point. The Torah Tumimah comments on that drasha that Rashi quotes from the Mechilta, that this is connected to the idea that we find that when it comes to preparing the matzah, as the Rosh notes, there is an idea of mitzvah bo yosu mibishlucho, the idea that one should be involved personally in preparing the matzahs. So if one assumes that whole idea of being involved yourself and not delegating to someone else is also a kind of hiddur, is a way of showing that this is something that you want to convey your own excitement for. So here again, it all kinds of comes together, that this notion of displaying personal enthusiasm for the mitzvot overall and for the mitzvah of matzah specifically and at this time specifically is all a related theme. So far, so good? Okay, so let's consider with that the question that I mentioned this morning, if you had a chance to think about it a little bit. So how does this connect to other days of the year? So what about on Shabbos and Yontif? Do we have a prohibition in the same sense of eating? Even though we know that there is a general value, and it's the Rambam Hilchos Shabbos, if you had a chance to see that, brings that as well. But in the same kind of formal sense that we find regarding Pesach, do we find that by Shabbos and Yontif? So we saw that from Machlokas. Like that, according to Rabbi Yehuda, yes, it's the same issue, but we apparently follow the view of Rabbi Yossi that this is a Pesach-specific concern. So how do you understand either side of that? It's the idea that it should only be about Pesach specifically and not about Shabbos and Yontif, or the other way, that maybe it should be the same idea by Pesach and Shabbos and Yantif also. So what side would have made more sense to you? How do you explain either possibility? Pick whichever one appeals to you most, whichever of those two studs. They should be different, they should be the same. Ari?
Over to the area of the
Okay, so that's an important point. Let's try to clarify the Lichtenstein, because first two, you combine two sides, which maybe legitimately should be combined. That's a little bit where we were leaning, but still, as far as they're presented in Rishonim, they're presented as two sides. So if we want to say that the Te'avon aspect is, let's say, like the Rashi and the Rashbam's position, that it's kind of a hider in the mitzvah, we noted that other Rishonim said it was because of Achila Gasa, and we talked about whether there could be some kind of a connection between those two possibilities. They're saying if it's about Te'avo, which is portrayed as an issue of hither, so therefore it should apply to Shabbos Net, if that's what you're suggesting. Okay, and if it's about the Korban Pesach, so then it doesn't seem like it's something we should extrapolate to other days. Which, that part about Korban Pesach and Matzah is machlokas in the Gemara and Kavzayin and the Beis. It's what's driving it. So does anyone want to add anything to that? Do you see that as pretty much the whole story, or is there anything more to consider? Zach?
Well, we saw the idea that maybe you said lahamoni.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so basically you're disagreeing with Ari, right? Because Ari said that the Te'avon idea should be more universally relevant. And you're saying, no, that the Te'avon we suggested was connected to Lechemoni specifically, and therefore it doesn't necessarily carry over. Anyone have any further thoughts? One side or the other make more sense to you? It should carry over, it shouldn't carry over? So it seems like there's much room to distinguish and to go down different paths, because there's truth to both sides of what Ari and Zach were saying, that broadly speaking, it would seem that general concerns of hiddur and of enthusiasm for a mitzvah could have applied to Shabbos and Yom Tov also. That to say that it's specific to Pesach, which seems to be our conclusion, at least in a more absolute sense. So why would we say that? So we could say, like Zach said, that if we explain it based on a lechemoni kind of concern, that therefore we want Te'avon more for matzah. So that would do it. We could also probably do it in a somewhat less absolute sense, right, and say that with Pesach there's a clear mitzvah min haTorah to eat something, and therefore the need to protect it is stronger. When it comes to Shabbos and Yom Tov, we don't have a specific food that has a mitzvah of achila that is connected to it. It's not clear whether you want to call eating on Shabbos achiv d'oraisa in the first place. That's a little bit of a discussion, right? How do you know that you're obligated to eat on Shabbos to begin with? So it's most often tracked to the pasuk in Sefer Yeshaya, say the Karos of the Shabbos Oneg, which may put it in the category, we spoke a little bit in the morning about the category of Divrei Kabbalah, so it's a pasuk from Nach. What exactly is the stature of that pasuk is an interesting discussion to be had. Ironically, the one Shabbos that we read that Haftorah is the Shabbos when we're not eating. If Yom Kippur falls out on Shabbos, we read that Haftorah in Yom Kippur. If it falls out on Shabbos, we read it then also. So we read that idea of a Karos LeShabbos Oneg, Davka on a Shabbos when we wouldn't be eating. But it's normally telling us that every other Shabbos we should be eating, but it doesn't present itself in the same level of Chiyu as Matzah is concerned. So you could say somewhere in between, you could say that, like Ari was saying, that it is somewhat similar. It's not a crazy leap to assume that it should be applicable to everything. But it's still understandable that Pesach has it in a more focused kind of way. And that the din of Pesach is going to require a greater commitment to this idea. If you looked at the Rabbeinu David has got very interesting things to say. So Rabbeinu David comes from the premise that they should have been the same. He says his view, what would he focus on? Right, if you recall, so he focused on the Echid Lagasa idea, which he understood as being in opposition to Rashi and the Rashbam. He says the Ferish of the Rashbam is wrong. It's not about Hidr, but it's about Echid Lagasa, and these are different ideas. But he says if it's about Echid Lagasa, so then shouldn't that be an issue Friday night also, and Yosef night also? So you have to eat, and Echid Lagasa could potentially knock you out. So his distinction there is that, no, that when it comes to Shabbos and Yontif, it's more of a generalized, goal-oriented obligation, that you want to be the oneg, you want to have a pleasant Friday night. So that means that somebody who is hungry should be able to satisfy that and should have a meal. But if you're not interested in eating, so then maybe you wouldn't necessarily have the obligation in the first place. It's connected specifically to the idea that it's something that will give you oneg. If you're not interested in eating anything more, so then it's not going to be applicable to you. So, okay, so it's not the same kind of a direct obligation. It's more of a goal-based obligation. And if the goal is not going to be relevant in that way, so that it's not going to play out the same fashion. And he writes that that's the machlokas review Doug Bielski, the question of whether there is a parallel idea when it comes to Shabbos and Yontif is all about how do you relate to that obligation to eat on Friday night. Is it more absolute and objective, and therefore you should have to protect it from Echid Lagasa the same way you have to protect matzah? Or do we conceptualize it differently and say that it's really all about if that's what makes you happy, and if it happens not to make you happy, then it's not going to be obligatory. Now, presumably, it's not as simple, even according to him, as saying, well, if you're not hungry, then it's not a problem, and just don't think about it, because presumably, Oneg Shabbos really would mean that you should be proactively engaged in an Oneg. So you're better off to have an appetite than to be able to enjoy the meal and have that oneg than to say, well, we could just cancel it out, and if you happen not to be interested, it doesn't matter, because then, okay, so it's not known for you and don't eat anything. You're not going to think that that's equal. You know, presumably you're still more in fulfillment of the oneg Shabbos by having an appetite to anything, and that's why we do want that ideally, and we do find it in a less absolute sense that it is relevant to Friday. But it's not the same kind of thing. It's not the same kind of obligation in of itself. This comes up because also the Gemara says in Masachas Tainus that if somebody has a bad dream and he's very disturbed by the bad dream, he's worried it may come true, he has a lot of anxiety because of it, so it's a good idea to fast. And he should fast right away. So if he has a dream on a Monday night, he should fast on a Tuesday. If he has a dream Wednesday night, he should fast on a Thursday. And if he has the dream Friday night, he should fast on Shabbos. So normally we don't fast on Shabbos. And yet here the Gemara is saying that for a bad dream, you should. So the Mefarshim explained that the reason we'd allow you to fast on Shabbos under those circumstances is because the purpose of eating on Shabbos is because of Oneg. The assumption is that it's going to make you happier to eat than to not eat, and that fasting is normally inconsistent with Oneg. But if you're so frahit, you're so upset about this bad dream, and eating is just going to keep you in a state of stress because you're not dealing with your bad dream, but fasting will actually make you more relaxed because you'll be able to feel like you're addressing it. So then, for that rare situation, for that individual, fasting is more conducive to oneg than eating is. But it's not perfect, it's just that that's the better choice under the circumstances. And the Gemara actually says that you have to be yoshev tainis latanisa, you'll have to fast later in order to atone for having fasted on Shabbos. So in other words, ideally, you would be able to eat on Shabbos, and that would be the best kind of honoring Shabbos. But if you're really so distressed, then you'll have a better way of addressing your distress by fasting. So, okay, that's the preferable of the two options, but it's not great. It's just a recommended step under the circumstances. So presumably it's somewhat similar here also. If a person happens to be so full that he can't eat Friday night, okay, so it's not an onus for him to eat. But still, presumably better to preserve your appetite so that you can have a meal. So it's not as absolute as Pesach is, but it has something along the same lines. It's just a different degree of intensity. And therefore, you have a basis for a machlokes, that according to one opinion, the Gemara really should be treated like Pesach. And according to the other opinion, which is the dominant opinion of the Halacha, it has some overlapping goals, but it's not on the same level as Erev Pesach, and we won't treat it that way, la Halacha. Okay, so far so good? Would it make sense? So maybe we could also extend it a little bit. And maybe we could say that the view of Rabbi Yehuda, that this does apply to Shabbos and Yontif also, maybe we could even connect it to the Lachamoni idea, even though it's not enough of a connection that we actually fully adopt it, Lahalacha. But maybe the position is based on an idea that there actually could be a comparison even on that level. Because if we understand that Pesach night we are telling a story and the matzah is a crucial part of telling the story and we don't want to impact on that. So maybe we have somewhat of a parallel Friday night also. And that maybe Friday night is on some level comparable to Pesach night. Clearly it's not as intense. But maybe it does have some kind of a broad connection, and this is something to think about. So, first of all, the idea of Kiddush. So, Kiddush is a mitzvah min haTorah. And, God willing, we'll get some time, probably we'll push it off, like we mentioned, till after Pesach to get as much of the Pesach themes in before Pesach itself. But our parak talks extensively about Kiddush. And the major sugyas related to Kiddush, many of them are in our parak. So maybe there's what to observe from there, that there is somewhat of a connection between the two. So in Min HaTorah, we have an obligation to remember Shabbos, Zachar, Soma Shabbos, Bekadsho. And we know that in practice, it's done at the Suda, and it's done over a cup of wine. How much of that is Min HaTorah? How much of that is Midrabanan? That is a machlokas rishonim, probably a lot of it is drabanan. But even so, min a level midrabanan, the rabbis felt it was indicated to make this whole package, that the mitzvah of Kiddush should be interwoven with our meal Friday night, and the Kiddush should be declared at the table over wine. And the story of Briyas Olam is told in a way that has something in common with the mitzvah of the Seder. And maybe that's what's being highlighted here to a certain extent, that the idea of the parallel between the two is to make that point and is to create certain linkages. And therefore, the notion that you have a parallel relationship to eating on the eve, on the hours before, may indicate that to a certain extent also. So also the idea is a lot of, using it in a different sense now, there's a lot of synergy in this parak, an internal synergy, and made up a lot of circularity, which is a part of the theme that we're seeing all over. Everything kind of ties into each other. So here, when it comes to, let's say, the role of wine, so probably that's through Midrabanan in both cases, Aleph Kosos for the Seder. Wine for Kiddush, according to a lot of the Rishonim, is also Drabbanan. But there seems to be somewhat of a correlation here that the theme of Briyas HaOlam and the theme of Yetzias Mitzrayim are conveyed in a very similar fashion. And not only that, but they are interlocked with each other, because one of the ideas that's derived from the Kriyas HaTorah in recent weeks is that Yetzias Mitzrayim should also be mentioned as a part of Kiddush. And how integral that is a discussion in the Chetzinuch and others. It was invoked, for example, there is a discussion which, God willing, we'll get to when we talk more about Kiddush, but just to say very briefly now, if you go to shul Friday night, and let's assume they don't make Kiddush in shul, the whole separate discussion whether they make Kiddush in shul nowadays, let's assume you go to a shul that don't make Kiddush. Nowadays, in COVID, so most of the shuls aren't making Kiddush for that reason. So let's assume you don't make Kiddush in shul. So do you fulfill the mitzvah min HaTorah of Kiddush through the Friday night davening? Clearly, midrabanan, you're going to have to go back to your table and do Kiddush makom suda on wine, etc. But are you in fulfillment on a level min HaTorah? So that brings up its own interesting set of issues for a later time. But the Menaches Chinuch argued against the view of Magen Avraham. The Menaches Chinuch argued that, no, you can't be Yotze Kiddush without saying the formal Kiddush in its full text, because the Kiddush that might be associated with just davening, Friday night davening, that doesn't have Yetzias Mitzrayim connected to it. And it's crucial for Kiddush that you have to have Yetzias Mitzrayim as part of it. So where that sheev comes from, God willing, we will explore. But it's just the idea that maybe there is some kind of a real parallel being drawn between the Seder and Friday night meal, and that clearly the Seder is a bigger deal on so many levels. But maybe every Friday night, Kiddush, there is something that is somewhat of an echo of the Seder experience, and maybe that's where you're seeing these parallels. So that's something we'll explore, both in the context of the Pesach Limud and Bez Hashem come back to looking at Kiddush by itself. But it's just an idea to keep in the back of your mind that maybe there is some kind of a strong linkage between the Seder and the Friday night experience with Kiddush. Okay, makes sense? Everybody with me? Okay. So, to go back to Pesach night, so if we assume that it's Mishum Matzah, that's what it sounds like, according to the most, if you saw the Tosfos, so Tosfos on Kuf Zayin Amud Beis, Tosfos assumes that it's not conclusive that it's because of Matzah. It could also be a Gezerah because of Karban Pesach, which sticks even Bizman HaZeh when we don't have the Karban Pesach. And they point to the fact that Rav Sheshes fasted the entire day on Erev Pesach, which it's a little hard to know what to learn from that, because Rashi and the Rashbam write that he fasted because of Matzah, and that he was somebody who had a very sensitive stomach. He was an Istinus, he was somebody very delicate, and while maybe for everyone else, just abstaining from food in the afternoon could have done it, but for him he had to pull back further, and he had to abstain the whole day. So, it's just interesting parenthetically, by the way, so the Yerushalmi, when it mentions this idea of Rav Sheshes not eating the whole day on Erev Pesach, so the Yerushalmi asks, well, maybe that's because he was a Bechor. So he was fasting for that reason. And then ultimately the conclusion is that it's because of the same point that Bavli makes, that he was an Istinus, that he was very sensitive. So the idea that maybe he should fast because he's a Bechor, we don't actually have that in the Talmud Bavli, so that Talmud Yerushalmi is the first major clue to that idea, one of the first major clues to the idea of a tinus of the firstborn. Also, of course, a reference to Kriyas HaTorah yesterday, Marcus Bacharos. But that's an interesting idea to explore, so God willing, we'll find an opportunity to talk about the tinus of the Bechor also, but that, whether that's somehow connected to this in any way is an interesting idea to consider, but it gets brought into the conversation by the Yerushalmi commenting on this idea of Rav Sheshes. So, basically, Rashi and the Rashbam on Kuf Zayin tell us that indeed this issue was because of matzah, and Tosfos, well, maybe it's possible that it's not about matzah, it is about the idea of Korban Pesach having a gezeira that applies even at Hayom Hazeh. So maybe it could have a practical difference. This is discussed in a sefer called Shari Zvon, Shirim on various topics, and he raises the question, what would happen if you have somebody, let's say a person is ill in whatever way that is relevant, and just not going to have matzah Pesach night. Practically speaking, it's not in the cards for him to have matzah. So does he also have the prohibition of eating on Erev Pesach, of eating a lot on Erev Pesach, if he is not going to eat matzah anyway? So he assumed that it should be totally on these two possibilities. That if you assume, like the Rashi and the Rashbam, that it's all about matzah, so that, yeah, if he's not eating matzah, it shouldn't apply. But if you assume, like Tosfos, that it could be about Korban Pesach, so before the rest of us are working off this concept even without Korban Pesach, so then the fact that the person is eating matzah shouldn't necessarily affect it. All right? Yes, very good point. Yeah, so it's a very delicate point, actually, because that is discussed in the forum, and it also comes up here because the Tosfos already addresses it, that the Rashbam addresses a little bit also, that basically here, once you bring in Korban Pesach, so it's a very nuanced point. Because your point is well taken, that we're kind of boxed into a very narrow corner. Because it's true that we're not allowed to be fasting when it comes to Korban Pesach, because yes, we're supposed to be not starving either. We're supposed to be in a state of Sviya, but at the same time, we are still concerned about Achila Gasa. So Achila Gasa is the focus here, not Teyavon, because we connected the two, Achila Gasa and Teyavon. But here, the idea that it's about Korban Pesach from the Gemara is connected specifically to the Achila Gasa phrasing. So just to be more precise about that, even though we thought they might be connected, but bringing Korban Pesach into the discussion is about Achila Gasa specifically. So it helps a little bit because it's less of a jarring contradiction to Teyavon, but it doesn't change the fact that you are still boxed into somewhat of a corner. Because there's a narrow space, because you need to be happy, but not too happy. You need to be basically satisfied, but not overfull. So if you were too hungry, it wouldn't be the Sfiyah. And if you were too full, it would be Achila Gasa. So I guess maybe it's one of the additional messages that, like everything in life, it requires precision and discipline and avoiding extremism. So if you were too extreme on either side, you wouldn't be able to fulfill the mitzvah of Korban Pesach. Maybe there's a drasha in that we can find what to learn from. But it does put you in a very balanced place. So if you were too hungry, you wouldn't be yotzei, or you would be missing at least that aspect of Alas Ova. And if you were too full, then you would risk invalidating the mitzvah because of Achila Gasa. But the Rashbam brings up, he addresses that a little bit, but he says that if it's about Achila Gasa, so still that's more of a matzah issue. Because even though it applies to both, but matzah is more sensitive to Achila Gasa messing it up. And therefore, he says for either reason we should say that matzah is really the focus. Because if it's about Achila Gasa, it applies to both. But matzah is a bigger concern. And if it's about just whether we have the concept or not, so nowadays we don't have Korban Pesach and we do have matzah, those are both reasons. There is a reason to work off a matzah angle and to assume that that's the issue. So that could affect if somebody knows he's not going to have matzah Pesach night. It's a little bit parallel to a question that Rabbi Akiva Eiger and other Achronim dealt with, that we have a mitzvah to, which is understood to be a mitzvah in our Torah, we have a mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur, mitzvah to fast on Yom Kippur, and to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. And some of the Rishonim understood that that's to prepare for the fast. That if we have either, it works in either direction, but the more likely assumption is that if you don't eat on Erev Yom Kippur, it's going to be very hard for you to make it through the fast. So you need to eat to be prepared to be able to fast successfully. So therefore, we have this din of eating on Erev Yom Kippur. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger and others dealt with the question, what if somebody who's a chola of a kind who's not able to eat, let's say, or is not able to fast? So kind of a very specific kind of chola because it goes back and forth, but let's say somebody is not going to be fasting on Yom Kippur for whatever reason. So does he also have the din of fasting on Erev Yom Kippur? So, of eating on Erev Yom Kippur. So, he's not going to be fasting on Yom Kippur, does he also have the obligation to eat on Erev Yom Kippur? So, perhaps, somewhat similarly, if somebody's not going to be eating matzah, does he also have the issue of not eating on Erev matzah? Erev Pesach. So, we also find that it does go in the other direction, so the din of Istin it shows us, that if you have somebody whose appetite is very, very sensitive, and he needs to pull back earlier, like with Sheshes, it's not enough for him to stop eating close to nighttime, but he's going to have to abstain all day, so then that's what we need from him. So there is a subjective element here to a certain extent. So it could be that it cuts in both ways. So if somebody knows that he needs to fast the whole day in order to be able to really go at the matzah with gusto, so then that's what they have to do. And conversely, if they know that they are so hungry that if they have a certain amount to eat before Erev Shabbat, before Erev Pesach, it's still going to preserve a lot for matzah, or if they're not eating matzah anyway, so then that could affect it in the other direction. Okay, makes sense? Okay, so let's just spend a few minutes now redirecting to the issue of matzah specifically on Erev Pesach. And let's lay a few things on the table. And then tomorrow we'll go into more a little bit about that specific issue. And then we'll segue into other fascinating topics that come out of our Mishnah. So this idea of not eating matzah on Erev Pesach, which seems to be more absolute, right? And even though our Gemara doesn't talk about it explicitly, but it's the Yerushalmi more explicitly, and Tosfos quotes that Yerushalmi with its comparison. So what kind of an isser is it to eat matzah on Erev Pesach? So, first of all, what's the reason? So, the truth is, there are a couple of theories as to what the reason is. We've seen one or two so far, but there's more than that. So, what possible reasons are there to prohibit matzah on Erev Pesach? What have we seen? What can we add? Menachem? Okay, so teyavon then, right? To have that appetite. In which case, it's really the same din as our Mishnah, right? So then, let's say for Rashi and Rashbam and our Mishnah, it's really the same din. It's all about teyavon. It's all one idea, And it's just that it applies differently in different things. So when it comes to food in general, it's calibrated to how it's going to affect your appetite. And when it comes to matzah, so it's really the same type of food you're going to be eating. And so we know that affects things in a different way. When it's you have a taste for all food when you're hungry, and you have a taste for a specific food when it's been a longer period of time since you've had it. So if we're looking, it makes sense to apply this broad concern differently to different things. And so if we're trying to preserve your appetite, we should say for all eating, the cutoff is a closer point. But for eating that specific food, we're going to want to push back further. So the idea of not eating matzah is going to extend in a both qualitative and quantitative way more than by other foods. But it could be that it's really about that. It's really about preserving your appetite for matzah. And that is the view of the Meiri. In addition, we saw the Rambam. Right, what does the Rambam say? Right, so if you recall that we've noted that the Rambam has three themes in one halacha that all connect to eating Erev Pesach. To work backwards, there was the Chavivas HaMitzvah idea, which could be general, could be specific, as we spoke about at the beginning. The second was Te'avo. But before that, he talked about matzah specifically. And there he invoked the idea of a hecker, right? You recall that's how the Rambam began, that we have to create a sign that even though maybe we like matzah, it clearly tastes different on that issue, but maybe matzah is something that you eat because you want to, maybe it isn't, but somebody's having a lot of matzah in general because he's hungry. So it could look like Pesach night, it's the same issue. So we need to draw a line. That okay, there's a no Pesach buffer zone, so no matzah buffer zone, so that when we return to the chi of matzah, it's going to be clear. And we drew the parallel to shofar, where there is a minig. It's not exactly parallel because there we're asking you to blow shofar every day of Tishrei Midin Minig, as opposed to matzah, where there doesn't seem to be any specific value to having matzah any time before Pesach. But it's similar in this sense that we ask for a buffer zone in between, and that you should take a day off and not blow shofar before the actual mitzvah of shofar and Rosh Hashanah. So here too, we want to create that hecker. Now, the Rambam's position, say a difference between the two, whether it's about preserving your appetite for matzah, or it's about creating a buffer between the matzah that you eat because you want to and the matzah that you eat because you are supposed to, because you're obligated to, is there a halachic difference between those two reasons? Does it affect anything? So the idea, if we say on the one hand that we avoid matzah because we want to preserve our appetite for matzah, right? Like the Meiri, for example, writes that it's because of Te'avo, so the same idea as not eating other things in Rashi and the Rashbam, but now focused on matzah. So if we say it, we want to preserve the taste of matzah, or if we say that it's in order to create a hecker, in order to show that it's matzah mitzvah on Pesach night, and until then it wasn't. So does that affect any halachic details? So one question that comes up, and the Tosfos Rid over here talks about it, and Sadi Testament Days and others talk about it, Let's say you want to eat matzah that tastes, you want to eat something that tastes exactly like matzah, but is not qualified for the mitzvah of matzah. Like let's say it's tzeiko shonachim. Let's say it's matzah that was not guarded for the purposes of matzah. Matzah is baked by non-Jews. Is that okay for Erev Pesach? So if it's matzah that you could not be yotze the mitzvah with, is that something you still have to stop? So if it's about preserving your taste for matzah, so then presumably if something tastes exactly like matzah, that would interfere, even if it's not matzah that you could use for the mitzvah. But, as we'll see, there are textual problems to taking that position. But that Nachanami may sound that way. While if the issue is that you want to create a hacker, it could be legitimate that if the mitzvah of matzah is not going to be fulfilled with what you're eating, that's not where we're concerned. But another possibility to enter into the equation, which will affect things. So this issue of eating matzah on Erev Pesach, is this an issue min haTorah or midrabbanan? So according to what we've seen so far, sounds like it's Drabbana, setting aside the fact that we don't necessarily have a source in the Torah, but also the kind of explanation sound Drabbana to say that it's to preserve the Teyavo, or as a Heker. So those don't seem to be Daraisa kind of reasons. But it could be that there are some views in Rishonim that do see it as deraisa, or at least give us a premise to see it as deraisa. So one is the Sefer HaRokeach, was one of the German Rishonim, that the Sefer HaRokeach writes that we know that there is a prohibition of eating matzah until Pesach starts, because matzah is connected to Pesach, to the Karban Pesach, and when it comes to Karban Pesach, he can't eat it until the night. So if they're all tied into each other, so too, matzah you also shouldn't dip into until night. So that could theoretically be the basis for a d'oraisa kind of application. In addition, the Bahag has it from a different entry point, but the Bahag notes the pasuk in yesterday's Kriya Torah again. That's where the Torah tells us that the Erev Tochu Matzos, you should eat matzos that night of Pesach night. So we could infer from there that only Be'erev and not before. And if that's the case, so then maybe that creates some kind of a Din Min HaTorah. So that's something that we'll have to explore as well. So what about the comparison that the Yerushalmi has to Arusasul Reis Chamav, somebody who's betrothed, and he is with his wife before they're actually married. So, what do you do with that comparison? And we saw, if you saw on today's list, that the Rishonim do turn to the comparison to some extent for practical purposes. Because we need to figure out what exactly is Erev Pesach for the purposes of this prohibition. So here you got to see the Balamor and the Ramban. And so the Balamor has a line which the Ramban disagrees with, and the Ran talks about also. Now, what is the Balamor addressing? What does he bring this in for? I'm trying to figure out, when does the prohibition begin? So it says the Balamor, the prohibition is only going to be after the sixth hour. Because Chametz is only after that. And that's what is indicated by the comparison to Arusa. And the Ramban doesn't accept that. Not yet because he totally throws out the logic. But he says that Erev Pesach the whole day, there is some aspect of the prohibition of Chametz. Because the obligation of Bedikas Chametz already begins the night before and covers the whole day. So therefore, on some level, you have the Isser Chametz already in play, even if it hasn't actually fully taken root yet. So both of them assume that there's some kind of connection here. That the prohibition of Matzah and Erev Pesach, because it's compared to Arus Soso, should be tied in to the prohibition of Chametz. How do you understand that? Anyone want to take a stab at that? How does that point you in that direction at all? What does the Baal HaMor mean when he says that? When he says that, oh, it's compared to Arusa, so it shouldn't apply until the Isser Chametz starts. So it's a little bit of a challenging comment. It seems like, on some level, what he's saying is that in order for this Isser to make sense, it has to have been created by some kind of other issue. So just like an Arusa is somebody who is prohibited to you until a certain time, so too, and something happens to create that relationship, so too, something happens to create this exclusive relationship, and you have to read a lot of this into the Baal HaMor is not explaining it. But just like when somebody gets married, so first is Kedushin, and he eliminates everybody else from the relationship, and then there is Nisuin, and they're actually fully permitted to each other. So too, when it comes to Chametz and Matzah, and the way they work together, so we have to first take Chametz out of the relationship, and say Matzah is the only permitted carbs, so to speak, you know, the only permitted bread. And even that is not yet permitted until the next stage. And if somebody's going to jump the gun, and if somebody's going to say that, well, we can't wait until then, so the same way we would disparage such a person and say you have to have more self-control, it's not right to not be able to wait until it's appropriate. So too, we'd say somebody eating matzah before Pesach starts, before Chag HaMatzah starts, more accurately, to not eat matzah until then, that would be a violation in a comparable way. So how far is this muscle going? Is that the idea? That we had to first after the rest of the world, just like Erisin asters all the other men. So we have to take Chametz off the table. And that gives us the state of Arusa. And then we have to wait until Nisuin, so to speak, and the Seder is comparable to Nisuin. And to not wait, in both instances, Matzah and Arusa, is a disparaged inclination. So that's something we'll have to figure out. There clearly is a difference between the two, because when it comes to Matzah, it's not really comparable to Arusa, because Arusa, she's already prohibited him anyway before this. And when it comes to Matzah is permissible until then. It only enters into any kind of a prohibition with the onset of the Yontif, the impending onset of the Yontif. And here, these Rishonim are assuming that the Yetzer Chametz is what really puts it into the lens. So how exactly that plays out, that's something we'll have to figure out. So that's something that we will pick up with tomorrow. After that, we have some really interesting, more general ideas that come out of the Mishnah. But just to quickly recap what we spoke about today, so we talked a little bit more about the prohibition of eating in general and about the Chaviv Sa Mitzvah idea in general, and whether it is general or whether it is specific or a little bit of both. And we talked about the question of whether the Erev Pesach idea should be also applicable to Erev Shabbos and Yom Tov, which is a machlokas in the Gemara, and we went through all the sudden why yes and why no. And we said that if it's about avoiding Achila Gassa and providing and preserving Te'avon, so there's a lot of logic that on the one hand could be relevant to Shabbos and Yom Tov also, while at the same time we understand why it's more intense for Pesach with the mitzvah focus specifically, and we looked at the Rebbeinu David, who says that he would have thought it should be the same, if the concern is Achila Gassa, it should be all of them. But when it comes to Pesach, okay, there's a specific mitzvah to eat the matzah. And when it comes to Shabbos and Yom Tov, it's more of an oneg idea, which will only apply if you have the appetite for it. If you don't, it won't. So it's not exactly the same kind of thing. But then we also put onto the table the possibility that maybe there's a tzad to compare the two, because maybe Kiddush Friday night and the Seder table have more in common than we appreciate, and maybe the idea that we're telling a story at the Seder with wine and everything else is actually also mimicked in a smaller level on a weekly basis on Friday night, and that maybe the placing of Kiddush in this parak and the sugis of Kiddush in this parak also reflects a parallel between them. And we also noted the idea of Zechir Tzitzias Mitzrayim being an integral part of Kiddush also, which is something to think about as well. Then we talked a little bit about just how the prohibition of eating, is it connected specifically to matzah or not, or to Karban Pesach, maybe the difference between Rashbam and Tosas. And we talked about people in subjective circumstances, what if they know they're not going to eat matzah on Pesach night, or what if they know that they need to pull back earlier in order to be able to preserve their attitude. How exactly does that fit in? And then we got into more about the prohibition of eating matzah on Erev Pesach. We saw that there really are, to be four explanations why it is, that either it's l'te'avon, like Meiri says, which puts it in the same category as everything else we're talking about here, or maybe it is to create a hecker, like the Rambam's view, and that maybe a difference between the two might be something that tastes like matzah, but is not a candidate for fulfilling the mitzvah of matzah. And we saw that there are two other Rishonim who seem to understand it as a din menat Torah, either because of the association to Karban Pesach, or because of the pasuk of the Erev Tochu Matzah, so we should understand the Erev specifically, and not until then. And then we also talked about the comparison to Arusa, and how it's invoked by the Baal HaMor and the Ramban in a different way in response to figure out when the prohibition starts. The Baal HaMor is saying it should only be from the time of Yisr Chametz, and the Ramban saying it could be even from the time of Bedikas Chametz, but both connecting it somehow to the prohibition of Chametz, gets into the whole Chametz Matzah connection. But it seems like the relationship to Arusa is that everyone else is prohibited except this one person, And that person also only becomes permitted at a later stage. So if that's the case, we can draw all these parallels here and understand the criticism is not being able to wait till that stage when the betrothed item or person, in which case, is actually permissible. And still, we have to figure out how that comparison works, because matzah is different. Matzah was completely permitted before this, while the arusasa was prohibited all the way through. And how exactly that comparison works, that's not, and is it a relevant part of the comparison? So all of that, God willing, we will pick up with tomorrow. Okay, everybody good? Everybody following everything? Okay, I will wish you a safe and happy day. Should be only good things. I look forward to seeing you in person tomorrow in our new room. So you got that message about the new large room. Hopefully that should be a safer and airier opportunity. So look forward to seeing you in person then. Okay, have a terrific day. Go to... Yes, sir. Sure. Stretches are good sometimes.
We say that on our sector, we're kind of reenacting our path of freedom, right? The idea of time. So what if we were to argue that this reenactment doesn't start on our sector, doesn't start on Saturday night, but it starts on our sector itself?
Yeah, I think that's true.
And therefore, you know, we're not eating all this food. We still want to be a little bit hungry, like a slave. And then when we finally get the Seder, we're able to go with all we want.
So the hunger specifically is to have the slave aspect.
Yeah,
that's interesting. And there are elements of that. It's also interesting because we didn't get to this. But when we say lachamoni, so we also refer to it in the beginning of the Seder, we say halachma anya de'achalu avasana. So what does that mean? So this lachamoni that our forefathers ate, when did they eat it? They had a mitzvah of matzah in Mitzrayim? So it seems to say that lachamoni is a part of the Shibud experience. So there are different explanations of that. I'd like to talk about some of what they are, but it relates a little bit to what you're saying, that matzah does have this aspect also of not just that they couldn't let the bread turn into chametz on their way out, but even when they were there, that there's some role of matzah. Okay, Ashikar, so we will see how that plays out.
Thank you, Rabbi. Have a good day.
All right, have an amazing day. Ashikar.